This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. Next week, Cincinnati voters will choose the city's next mayor and city council. John Cranley and Roxanne Qualls are battling to be mayor, and 21 candidates are on the ballot for the 9 council seats. Coming up this hour, we'll discuss the campaigns and the issues, and later in the hour, we'll talk about the legacy of outgoing mayor Mark Mallory. Joining us are Jean Beaupre, who's the assistant director of the Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program at Xavier University, and Cincinnati Enquirer Politics and Government editor Carl Weiser. You can join our conversation. Our number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Gentlemen, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
My pleasure. For having us.
And it's Halloween, so this is a special edition of Cincinnati Edition. And thank you all for wearing your political analyst costumes for today's show.
It's not a costume if it's your real job.
It's very scary.
Gene, let me start with you, and I'll let all of you address this question. We mentioned that John Cranley and Roxanne Qualls are the candidates for mayor. Just to start off, analyze what you've seen so far. What are your thoughts as we head into folks actually casting ballots on Tuesday?
I think there was a general sentiment in the early days of the campaign that it would be a pretty even fight. At least that was my perception, and I always extend that to the rest of the general public. And I think it's really turned out to be kind of a dogfight with really only one dog in it. Cranley has been very active in for a long time now, even in the, at the primary time, of working really the two hardest issues, working the two biggest issues as hard as he can. The nice thing about them, the parking meters and the streetcar, is you just say the word. You know, so many times you have an issue, but it takes you a paragraph to describe it, and it doesn't here, partly because those issues have gotten currency. And he's just not letting off the lever. And I think Roxanne has done a job trying to come at a different angle, and maybe she's deflected some of that. But I mean, I think they've both run good campaigns, but just in terms of who has the upper hand in terms of issues and so forth, issues that have currency, I think that's where he is. He has a little more money and stuff like that as well.
Carl, you've obviously been editing the stuff your reporters have been writing about the mm-hmm. race. I think did you moderate a debate?
I did. We did. I moderated 2 online chats with the candidates, and then there was an East Side Forum at which I was moderating.
So what's your take on what you've seen to date?
I agree with Dr. Beaupre. I think that early on, this seemed like Roxanne Qualls' race to lose. She had been, she was the vice mayor, in some ways an incumbent. And in the last city election, we analyzed the results, and she had won essentially everywhere in the city. And so I think we might have even dubbed her the mayor in waiting at one point. And so what's happened is that Cranley has waged a very aggressive campaign and I think has probably won over a lot of voters that way. And I think recently we don't have any independent polling of our own. And I don't know if anybody else here has seen any polling. I haven't seen any polling.
Well, there is some polling out there I've heard of that's credible. And Cranley did have a pretty big lead. Mm-hmm. At one point a few weeks ago, but I think it's tightening up a little bit.
Right, that's what I hear too.
I think it's tightening up mainly because I think there are a lot of Democratic voters out there who are starting to go back home, as you might say. They're looking at Cranley and looking at who he is allied with, the Republican money, the Coast people, and Cranley's tried to keep arm's length away from those people, but there's some resentment among Democrats about that. And this is a Democratic city. So it may be closer than a lot of people think. I think Gene's exactly right. This thing has been unique in that there have been some real clear issues and clear differences on issues. And that's not always been the case in mayor's races. I mean, we can only go back to 2001. But usually there aren't those kind of clear draw the line between the candidates' issues. And there certainly are this time.
Yeah.
I was going to ask this later, but since we've already hit on when we talk about polling in national elections for presidential races, it seems like there's 13 polls a day that come out. Why is it, and Howard has, I've talked about this in the newsroom, Why is it so hard to do local polling? You would think that you know, since we see it on the national level, it would just be obvious that it would happen on the local level too.
I think most pollsters kind of shy away from it because the sample size is so hard to put together. Put together a representative sample size in a city, which is not that big.
Mm-hmm. You're
not talking about the state of Ohio. You're not talking about the United States. You're talking about a little corner of it.
Carl, has the Enquirer tried to do any polling?
We did not do polling for this mayor's race. We hope maybe to do some polling next year on the governor's race. But it is a very expensive proposition, and the candidates have been doing polls. And early on, we saw some of those polls, and some of the interest groups around here have also done some polls. But we haven't seen anything that's, I would say, is truly independent. So it's hard for us to sort of get a real grasp on what's happening out there.
And just to echo both those comments, but Howard's in particularly, the sample size, the city size is smaller. And, you know, people have to remember a survey is a point in time. It's like a snapshot. And in a city this size, things can change pretty quickly. So, you know, I agree with Howard and others. You're not going to spend a lot of money on it. And you really don't want to put your reputation on, you know, what the results are that you come up with.
I'm not even sure how close people have been paying attention to the mayor's race up until just now.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, on social media and on our stories, we hear about the people who are most engaged and generally on one side or the other. But it's hard for me to discern how much interest there is out there. And I think the low turnout on primary might be.
Well, I think one way you discern it is taking a look at these absentee ballot applications, which are way, way down.
That's right.
Over 2 years ago and 4 years ago in similar elections. And that's probably the best indication of voter interest in this thing.
Yeah.
You know, I would so I don't know whether this is right or not, but let me just propose it. I think that might be right. And then you say, well, how can there be so much fuss? Everybody knows about the streetcar. Everybody knows about parking meters. But, you know, in your newspaper, in the Enquirer, way back when, if I remember correctly, there was a survey that said people were very aware. They had a high recognition of those two issues. And then the next question or question down was, would this affect the way you voted? And a very high percentage said no. And so maybe we're getting worked up about this because we see that as a real clear fight. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is staying home. I don't know.
We got a comment from Twitter, and I think this is something that Howard touched on. Mike tweets that the GOP relationship with Cranley has caused resentment among some Dems, and that brings the point you were talking about, that some Dems were coming home.
I'm hearing that more and more from Democrats around the city, yeah.
When you were talking about the low number of absentee ballot request, that leads to the next question about turnout on Tuesday. And some are predicting that this could be a very low turnout city election. Who does a low turnout favor?
Well, that's a real good question. It's hard to say. My general answer to that is whoever is mad about something, they're the most likely to go out and vote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who's mad about things? The streetcar opponents, the parking meter lease opponents, the people who are fed up with a city council that struggles to put together a balanced budget every year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe that, you know, that would rebound in Cranley's favor.
Mm-hmm.
Just before we move on from that, though, you know, the people who are mad about the streetcar, but there are probably an equal number of people who are very supportive of the streetcar and would be mad if it got canceled.
That's true. And the question then becomes, are they motivated enough? Are they motivated enough by the Qualls campaign and by their own beliefs to go out next Tuesday and vote? And that's what we've got to wait and see.
And to answer your question earlier, I think it was this week, Tim Burke, the chairman of the County Democratic Party, sent out an email saying he was worried about low turnout and specifically what that might mean for Issue 4. He thought a low turnout election might help issue 4, which is the pension referendum.
Right.
It would change the way the city does its pension. Virtually every candidate running for mayor or city council is opposed to that. And his fear is that a low turnout election may bring exactly some of those angry, maybe more Tea Party voters.
That's right.
Gene, you want to weigh in on turnout?
Well, you know, this I see a looking for the right word, a diminution, if you will, of party in all of this. You know, people are getting cross endorsed. There aren't the resources to put behind candidates, and there's so many candidates. And you know, I wonder if there was and whether there still is a basic Democratic vote and a basic Republican vote who look to their party in one way or another for candidates that you know, now it's like it just doesn't mean as much anymore. And that may have some impact on it. It's not going to have an impact in a presidential race or maybe even a congressional race. But in something like this, I think it could show itself.
This is the fourth direct mayor's election since 2001. Is it fair to say that this is probably the most contentious or contested one to date?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, it's been also the first election that we've seen that had in the era of social media. And that's frankly where we've seen a lot of really nasty, contentious stuff. I recall the Mallory Pepper race back in 2005 was pretty lively, but it was mostly over policy differences. And this one has gotten, especially on social media, kind of personal.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of, and we've had to do fact checks on some of the things that have been circulating on Twitter and social media because, and we find out about things on people push stories in social media much more than they used to. So that's been a real change in this election. That I think that's one area where we've definitely seen an increase in contentiousness.
We're talking today about next week's Cincinnati city elections, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. We're discussing next week's election for Cincinnati Mayor and City Council with Gene Beaupre, who's the Assistant Director of the Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program at Xavier University, and Cincinnati Enquirer Politics and Government Editor Carl Weiser. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Before the break, we were talking about the fact that this could be the most contentious and contested mayor's race to date. It could also be the most expensive mayor's race to date. True?
Yeah, I think it will be. I mean, in the end, 2005 with David Pepper and Mark Mallory was an expensive race. And Pepper outspent Mallory by a wide, wide margin. And, of course, he lost the election. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think you're going to be in a neighborhood of $1.8 million, something like that, that's going to be spent to become mayor of Cincinnati between these two candidates. Because Cranley's already over $1 million. And Roxanne Qualls is probably going to get to at least $750,000 or $800,000.
Mm-hmm. I think that's due in part and only in part to the fact that there are two Democrats.
Right.
And the Republican money in town wants some place to put their money. So, you know, quite honestly, if they pick up the phone and call somebody, you know, they'll answer. And, you know, Cranley's seemed to have become their – there was the talk before the primary that if, you know, the margin was close, you know, that would be a different thing. But, you know, it wasn't. And I think right after that, the money went his way.
Yeah. Some of the Republican money people are kind of hedging their bets and going both ways.
Sure.
But the preponderance of it is going Cranley's way because I think they see him – he's perceived as the more conservative – more business-friendly candidate.
And he's worked hard to gain that image.
Oh, cultivate that, sure.
Not just in the media, but, I mean, on the one-to-one place.
But that he has to walk a fine line on that, too, because he takes that Republican money and he is, you know, friendly with these people and he's cultivated these relationships. but the voters themselves are not Republicans.
Yeah. This sometimes comes back to haunt him. At the Eastside Forum I was moderating the other day, we took questions from the audience. One of the questions was, why is the Tea Party supporting you, John Cranley?
Right.
And it was not a question I think he was happy to get, but
That's the kind of thing that, you know, you have to remember. This is a heavily Democratic city when it comes to voting. I mean, we've had Democratic majorities on city council for a long time now. Mm-hmm. We haven't had a Republican mayor in this city since Gene Ruhlman. And, you know, so you have to walk a real fine line. Charlie Lucan was able to do this for years. He took the Republican money, but he got the Democratic votes. Now, that's what Cranley – the kind of thing that Cranley has to pull off this time.
Part of the way he's doing that, I think, is by a vigorous grassroots street-level campaign in the African-American community, which, you know, is a probably the highest repository of Democratic voters. I don't know what they say. I don't know what he does about it, but I know that there are a number of people who are prominent in that community that are supportive of him, and that's really how you work the community.
Yeah. We had a story early on, I think, from Sherry Coolidge on the importance of the African-American vote in this race, and you could see it almost every week in the endorsements they put out and in their ads and in the list of, you know, who they listen to, and it's really, really a fight for the African-American vote here.
We are talking today about next week's Cincinnati city elections for city mayor and city council. And joining us on the phone right now is Cincinnati Enquirer editorial page editor Dave Holthouse to discuss the newspaper's endorsement for mayor and city council. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Glad to be with you.
You issued your endorsements on Sunday, and for mayor, you endorsed John Cranley, and your line was, "This is John Cranley's time." Why did the editorial board think that?
Well, we really think Cranley has the leadership style that the city needs at this moment to really continue some of the progress that's been made in recent years. We think that he has the ability to articulate a vision and to communicate that to the public and to other government leaders and business leaders, and to kind of create momentum and continue the momentum and get the public behind a vision for progress for the city. We think he'll be a very energetic and active mayor. Given the last 8 years where there have been some issues that have really called out for some leadership that hasn't really materialized, we think his candor and his frankness and his directness and his energy is something the city really needs at this time.
Can I ask? I wanted to. There was a line in your editorial on Sunday that I wanted to read. "Quote: He can be charming. He can be bombastic. He can be convincing. He can be controlling. The points he earns for his sharp mind, he sometimes loses for his sharp tongue." How much of a concern is that?
Well, that is a concern, and that's why we wanted to point that out in the editorial. He has a tendency often to sort of shoot from the hip, but I think that's more of an example of his passion about issues and about the city that we found appealing. He often speaks, it seems, quickly without a lot of deliberation. But, that was a risk that we were willing to entertain. And given his record on council in the past, he served 8 years or so on council, where he was able to build coalitions and work collaboratively with other people on council, that's a tendency that can be overcome.
But basically, Dave, you said that he needs to tone it down a bit in terms of the confrontational part of his makeup.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, given the fact that if he is elected, you know, he'll be the figurehead of the city and in a position where he is speaking for the city and is the public face, a visible face of Cincinnati, he's going to need to work, I think, on some more diplomatic skills along those lines. That's just kind of what you expect from that job. So, but I think he's certainly capable of doing that. He's been in campaign mode here for, months now, almost a year. So he's been running hard. So a lot of this is due, I think, to that campaign mentality and his drive in wanting to get elected. But, I think that's something that we saw in him that he can achieve and that has achieved previously on council and in his role, you know, as a private attorney, too.
Dave, I've seen this process work, from an arm's length in my years at the Enquirer. I mean, how close a call was this?
Really, it wasn't that close of a call. I would say that, the editorial board, it was not a unanimous call, but there was pretty much consensus that Cranley was the person that, was right for Cincinnati at this time. And, in a lot of ways, Roxanne's would have been a continuation of the current leadership. In some ways, that's what she was viewed as. So we felt there was a need for a change in tone and a change in leadership. A change in kind of the visibility of the mayor, and that was really there was a lot of consensus around that.
It's Gene, Dave.
Yeah,
it's interesting because as I was listening to you talk, I thought about that. I thought, somebody was talking to me about the current mayor, and people would argue a lot has happened in the city. A lot of positive things have happened, but he has not been he didn't bang on the podium. He didn't, hold press conferences. He got things done that way. And I agree that would probably be more, Roxanne, in fact, takes a long time to build coalitions around things. But you would propose that it's time to do something differently.
Well, I think if you look at two of the major issues that have, in the last year or two that have come up and, that got turned into campaign issues, the streetcar and the parking issue, and particularly on the parking issue, I think would have benefited from the mayor's leadership and, his capacity to persuade the public about the benefits of this deal. That really wasn't there, and as a result, it became a very divisive issue at a time when, we really need to kind of work together and move forward. So I think if that leadership capacity had been there, he would have been able to sell that deal both to council and to the public in a way that would have been beneficial for the whole city, and to a lesser degree the streetcar. I mean, that was he was out front in some ways on that, and that was there was quite a bit of public debate about that one, but even with that, I think there could have been more confidence building on the part of the mayor to encourage the public and to build confidence that City Hall knows what it's doing and that this program, this project, is right for the city.
That change theme, is that what drove the endorsements in the council race? I believe you endorsed 5 non-incumbents and 4 incumbents. I think I've got that number right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in some ways. I mean, I think there we were mostly looking for some level of competence in dealing with some of the big issues that are out there, some of the priorities, such as the budget, which has, you know, been out of balance for about 10 years or so, and, you know, some willingness to take a look at some sacred cows, such as police and fire benefits, and also a willingness to promote neighborhood development, which is an area that, you know, we see needs to be done. You know, there's a lot happening in downtown and over the Rhine, but there's beginning to be some things happen in the neighborhood, but that was something that we were looking for in the candidates, too. So, you know, I think it really came down to competence and our confidence that these candidates would focus on those priorities.
And all six candidates who were endorsed by the Charter Committee were endorsed by the Enquirer, right?
Yeah, that's correct, although that wasn't really factored into our decisions, but that, yeah. That's the way it worked out.
Dave Holthaus is the Enquirer's editorial page editor. Thanks for joining us to talk about the newspaper's endorsements.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing. I'm sure most VXU listeners know this, but I just do want to remind people that the Enquirer's endorsements in no way affect our news coverage of the mayor's race or the council candidates. I'm not privy or privy to or consulted on these endorsements.
I will vouch for that, having been there for many
years. While we're talking about who's endorsing whom, there's a this is from City Beat. I think it's this week's City Beat. Let's see. Roxanne Qualls has the endorsement of City Beat, the Charter Committee, the Sierra Club, the Women's Political Caucus, and the Laborers Local 265. And John Cranley, as you just heard, has the endorsement from the Enquirer, the Fraternal Order of Police, the International Association of Firefighters, the Home Builders Association, the Green Party of Southwest Ohio, and the Sentinel Police Association. And a couple of notable absences there, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have not endorsed in the mayor's race.
The Green Party endorsed Cranley?
That's at least what I saw on, I think that was on Facebook this morning. What would this race be like? I mean, we have the streetcar and we have the parking lease. Would it be the same dynamic if one of those was missing and perhaps, you know, was the streetcar the issue and then the parking lease just kind of piled on top of it?
Boy, that's a hard one to deal with. It's hard for me to imagine what that would be like. I mean, I don't think you need two issues to get the kind of, what two issues do is they give you...
But it's like you started from the beginning, though. You said you don't have to describe this. All you have to do is say streetcar
right.
and parking lease.
Right.
If you took, you know, if it was just the streetcar.
But each of those issues has its own constituency, both positive and negative. And so, if you will, Cranley gets a twofer. I mean, he draws people who don't care or even like the streetcar, but are just hot about parking meters.
And what about maybe some people were waffling with the streetcar and then the parking lease just kind of added a little fuel to the fire?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, these two issues obviously are driving this campaign. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and Cranley is behind the wheel on that. Now, you know, in the past we've had elections like 2005 with Pepper and Mallory, where you had no great divisive issues between the two of them. You had a difference in styles. You had David Pepper, who was coming out with like 12,000-page reports on, you know, what he was going to do for the city and posting them on his website. And
you being
the 20-point plans and
the
all
good
of this
journalist
sort of
where you are, you read all 12,000 pages.
Yes.
And he lost the Green Party when he
right.
did that, too.
Right? Yeah, he did. Yeah. But then there was this Mallory who was just saying, hey, I love the city. I'm going to do good things, you know, and depended entirely on direct mail, did no television whatsoever, and ends up winning the election. Yeah. And it was a choice between two different styles. Voters looked at the candidates and said, this is a nice guy, this Pepper guy, but, you know, he seems like kind of a wonk. Mallory seems, you know, more likable, more, you know, down to earth, more, you know, mayor-like. And he ends up winning the election.
You know, that's a good point, and I wouldn't overplay the issue thing. I think what Dave said just a few minutes ago was that's what they did. They didn't pick on those. The editorial board didn't pick. They picked on the character. And, you know, you can do that in a council race, too. You're almost forced to because there are no issues that you can apply. So, you know, I like this person. I don't like that person. But in the mayor's race, and you are picking a leader, you know, not one of nine, but picking a leader. You know, I think a lot more personality is a good. Yes. I think your vote's more from your gut than it is from your head in that election.
Mm-hmm. And one thing the Inquirer found is we actually analyzed all their votes when Cranley and Qualls were on council together, and they ended up. Turns out they had voted together 98% of the time,
right.
And the style differences between the two are really pretty extraordinary. Yeah. And we really are picking what kind of style we want in our mayor.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Carl, just real quickly here in about 30 seconds, I wanted to ask you about something that you had, I think it was on the front page of today's paper, about who these folks listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about how that drives the mayor that he or she could be.
Well, this is who someone consults. I mean, think of our listeners, think in your own world when you need advice, you know, who you turn to and what groups you turn to can really help influence the decisions you make. You know, these people may not be people who are going to be a part of a Qualls or Cranley administration, but you know they're who people are going to turn to. You know, I think Mark Mallory, for example, probably turned sometimes to his dad for his advice, and his dad was a Columbus figure and that's a sort of different way of doing business than other things. And I think that might have affected how Mark Mallory.
Oh, yeah.
You
could see it in the way he ran council meetings.
Yes, exactly.
We're talking about the races for Cincinnati mayor and city council. Voters will make their selections next week, and we'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. After months of campaigning, city voters will head to the polls Tuesday to select the city's next mayor and city council. We're discussing those races today with Xavier University's Jean Beaupre and the Cincinnati Inquirer's Carl Weiser. You can join the conversation 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And Mike is calling from Clifton. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, I feel a little bit conflicted about this election since I support the streetcar and oppose the leasing out of the parking. Both of them seem to be a waste, getting off the streetcar after the expenses have already been incurred and giving away the parking meters.
So where does that leave you with your decision?
I'm probably going to have to support Qualls because she's a real Democrat and she has real experience. And, you know, I know Cranley came right into city council out of law school practically. And Qualls has been around a long time, done a lot of work.
All right, Mike, we appreciate your comments. You want to respond to Mike's comment about being conflicted?
I think if Mike's right, Qualls ought to go out and do an I'm a Real Democrat commercial for TV.
That goes exactly to what Howard was talking about earlier.
That is what I was talking about earlier, that, you know, those kind of voters, and particularly, you know, like you're talking about Clifton, Northside, some of those, you know, East Walnut Hills, some of those areas, that those Democrats may be starting to go, you know, they were conflicted at first and are starting to move in Qualls' direction. Don't know if there'll be enough of them. Don't know if it'll work, but I think it's definitely happening.
I'm surprised John Cranley isn't on the line right now, calling us and telling us he's a real Democrat.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I think the Inquirer covered this early on, maybe before the primary, right after the primary. The story was, you know, our listening area covers a lot of counties besides the city of Cincinnati. Why should somebody who lives in Warren County, Butler County, Northern Kentucky, Southeast Indiana care about who's on Cincinnati Council or who's the city's mayor?
Yeah, thanks. Jane Prendergast, who's been covering City Hall in the mayor's race for us, fresh off, by the way, the presidential race last year, so she's had a busy 2 years, did that story. And the mayor essentially, for the rest of the world outside of Cincinnati, is the face of Greater Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And even folks in Northern Kentucky, I think it was the head of the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, that said, this is the person that represents Cincinnati to the world. This is the face. This is what they picture. Then there's a whole bunch of other very sort of real life reasons why suburbanites should care. You know, much of the city tax base actually comes from suburbanites mm-hmm. who work in the city and pay the wage tax, which pays for all these things that the city council and the mayor are discussing. And so there's virtually every suburbanite comes in for Reds games or Bengals games or, you know, a night at the Aronoff or Music Hall. So you certainly drive city streets and you may need other city services, you know, the cops or something like that. You come into Fountain Square. So, yes, virtually everyone who lives in Greater Cincinnati has a stake in who wins on Tuesday night.
On Tuesday night, I know 2 years ago when the absentees were counted, between 8 and 8:30, they showed that there was going to be a change on council, and that held up through the night. What should we be watching for Tuesday night early? If the absentees come back Cranley's way, does that say anything? If they come back Qual's way, does it matter? Are there going to be early signs that we need to watch for?
Well, it's going to be if it's a low number, that confounds it a little bit, I think.
Right.
It makes it harder to figure that out. I don't have the crystal ball.
More there are in terms of absentee ballots, right, the more it tells you. And you know, this year it's way way down. So I personally, when I'm looking at them on Tuesday night, I'm not going to pay as much attention as I usually do to absentee mm-hmm. ballots. But it's hard to tell.
Yeah, this election might go a little late.
It could, yes.
So, in spite of the fact that it may be a smaller count.
Well, it could go late, and whether it's because of the mayor's race or because of those, 8, 9, and 10 in the council field race, that's good. That's only a handful of votes usually.
Exactly.
Between 9 and 10, between winning and losing.
And if there are fewer votes cast.
And if they're – right, even, exactly. Right. It could be even closer.
Yes, I would like to put out a plea to the Hamilton County Board of Elections to please count your votes in time for our deadline.
Well, make a plea to have the poll workers at the polling places get those things down to the board.
I think it's still amazing to me that punch cards were supposed to be slower and this new technology was supposed to make it faster, but the counts – to me, always appeared faster with the punch cards.
Don't get me started.
That's another show.
Yeah, that's another show.
We mentioned there are 21 candidates running for council, 9 seats. This year, the council members elected will get to serve a 4-year term instead of 2 years. And we know that there will be at least one new council member because Roxanne Qualls, running for mayor, could not run again for council. What I hear conventional wisdom down at City Hall is most folks think that open seat is David Mann's. Should David Mann be comfortable?
Gee, I don't think I'd say that to some of the incumbents, especially the ones that have raised, north of $300,000.
Well, I mean, I think for that open seat.
Yeah, for the open seat.
David mm-hmm. Mann, is pretty good bet. Personally, I think it's going to be more than that. But, it might be 2 or 3 or, even 4. But I would think David Mann has a pretty good shot at picking up Qual's seat or
– Let me ask you a question, Howard. Not to be the interviewer here, but would you have thought that when he announced?
Yeah, I did.
Really?
Yeah. I did because he's always had, a good reputation mm-hmm. because – The electorate tends to be older, mm-hmm. and they remember him. And he was always, he was never a bomb thrower or crazy, type. I mean, he was a calm, reasonable guy, served a term in Congress, got beat by Steve Chabot. I thought he would be formidable, from the beginning. And I think he's raised enough money to be able to be on TV and get his message out there. Yeah. He's doing direct mail. So,
and he is a Democrat.
And he is a Democrat.
Right.
And he has a charter committee endorsement. as well. And, you know, there are other strong candidates out there, too.
That's what I was going to ask, is who would you keep an eye on? And I hate to use the term sleeper candidate, but who's somebody out there that you're going to be watching on Tuesday?
Well, sometimes it takes several tries for people to get noticed. So maybe someone like Kevin Flynn, who I think is on his third try for counsel.
Right.
And it's, I think, pretty well respected out there.
It's his best campaign, too.
Yeah, he's running a good campaign this time. You know, seems to have a little more money behind him, a little more push behind him. But there, you know, there is a lot of times one person who breaks through on the first shot. You know, Phil Heimlich did it. David Pepper did it. They had big names.
PG did it last night. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Sittenfeld did it, you know, two years ago.
Didn't all those people also have a lot of money?
That is correct. They had a lot of money.
Right.
And obviously Sittenfeld still has a lot of money running for a second term. Greg Landsman, I think, is somebody that you need to watch because he's raised a fair amount of money, gotten his message out both on TV and through direct mail. So, you know,
and don't forget Vanessa White has won citywide before.
Vanessa White has won citywide, and
she was on the school board.
Yeah, I wouldn't discount her either.
Oh, no, I wouldn't either.
She's very strong.
Just before we run out of time here, we've been talking about being a Democrat. The Democrats endorsed 10 candidates for 9 council seats. Is that going to cause any problem for voters?
It's a good thing that it's a party where people have their own mind, so they won't follow the rules and go in and vote 10 times and have their ballot discounted.
Right. Well, and if they do vote for 10, it's going to pop out again and tell them that they did it wrong.
Right.
But, I mean, the fact is, and this has been true for, you know, the 30-some years that I've been covering politics in this town, the average voter votes for about 6.3 to 6.5 candidates. Nobody votes for 9.
Right.
Usually your vote around 6, 7, something like that.
We have John Paul, who is on the line from Clifton. John Paul, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, is there a single location to go and look up information about all the different people running for council and all the different issues that are going to be on the ballot?
Well, I would suggest you go to cincinnati.com/inquireavote, and we have interactive guides to all the city council candidates and all the mayor candidates, where they stand, fact checks. And also on Saturday, if you live in the city, you'll be getting a 14-page standalone voter guide that also has this.
And you can also find information at the Hamilton County Board of Elections website, and the League of Women Voters, has their who's who of elections that is online as well.
All right. Thank you very much.
We appreciate your call. We've been talking about who the new mayor is going to be, who the new council could be. Cincinnati Mayor Mark Mallory this week delivered his final State of the City address. And one of the things he was asked about was what his legacy will be. Take a listen.
And people ask me all the time. They say, what do you want your legacy to be? They say, what do you want to be remembered for in terms of your time as mayor? A lot of people think that I want that legacy to be the streetcar. Well, that's not the case, Charlie. It's just not the case. They may think that I want my legacy to be the banks or the revitalization of Over the Rhine or the progress that we've made in multiple communities around the city. That's not what I want. I simply want my legacy to be that I said we were going to change the direction of the city of Cincinnati, and we did that. I said that we were going to revitalize downtown, that we were going to focus on our neighborhoods, that we were going to make public safety a priority, and that we were going to change our national and international image. We did all of that. If there is a legacy to be left, it is the one that challenges citizens to never accept that we can't do what we set out to do. Never again can we accept that. So filling potholes and picking up trash and paving streets, we're supposed to do that. We are better than that. We do that every day. That's not the issue. The issue is, how are we going to be a transformative city? The issue is about being a progressive 21st century city. See, that's a change in attitude. That's the legacy. And it's that change in attitude that has led to the legacy that we are leaving. The legacy is not mine. The legacy is yours. It's Cincinnati's. you changed. You're the ones that have new pride in the city. You're the ones that step up to challenges. You're the ones that take on big projects. You are the ones that embrace the future. And this is how great cities are made. This is how great cities are maintained. The city of Cincinnati has returned to the column of great cities. We have returned to our heritage, a can-do city, making national headlines, making international headlines for all of the right reasons. You, Cincinnati, you created the buzz that you're experiencing. You deserve it.
Cincinnati Mayor Mark Mallory, during his final State of the City address Tuesday evening at the Ensemble Theater. Before we talk about his legacy, Howard, you talked about, both of us were there. You've covered a lot of these speeches, and you said this was one of a kind.
Well, I've not covered a lot of these kind of speeches because this is the first time I've ever heard a mayor, as he was leaving office, do any kind of a State of the City address. But, you know, this was such a unique setting. You're sitting in the Ensemble Theater and over the Rhine. There's a set that's dressed like a living room from the play that was being put on there. And he's sitting on the couch. He wanders over to the kitchen table. He sits at the seat. He walks around the stage. And, you know, he uses a lot of comedy, a lot of one-liners. He does media. He does videos and slides. And it was like a one-man show. I mean, it was a one-man theatrical production, you know, like Hal Holbrook doing Mark Twain. And it was just absolutely unique.
Gene, he says he doesn't want his legacy to be the streetcar. He says that, you know, he instilled this can-do spirit in Cincinnati. Do you agree with that? As much as he may not want the streetcar to be his legacy, that the success or failure of that project is going to be his legacy?
No, I think he's bigger than that. And you know, it took me a long time to have the belief that there was really a lot going on in Cincinnati. He's not, I mean, the kind of what I just heard out of him was not something you hear once a week from the mayor. And I think he built a lot of support for things without a great deal of visibility. Somebody asked me, one of the big questions is, what's he going to do now?
Mm-hmm. Well, I had that written down. So what's next?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what I wish for, but one of the things was, would he go to Washington and, you know, would he be a member of Congress? I mean, I think he'd have a hard time statewide, but he might take on Chabot. You know, that would be an interesting thing. And then I thought he'd be pretty. It'd be hard. I'm not saying
it wouldn't be easy.
No, it wouldn't. But in terms of a federal office, what are his you know, options? But I think he'd be slick if he was in the Congress. I could see him down on the floor of the House of Representatives or in the caucus rooms or whatever, really, really working it well. I think he's that kind of mayor. I thought he would come back from Columbus and be, reward your friends and punish your enemies and, you know, to have big visibility. And I don't think that's the case.
Carl, the legacy question?
Well, there's no question that this city is vastly different now than it was when he first took office. And he's right. If you look at the banks or over the Rhine or Fountain Square, which he mentioned in his State of the City that he had originally even opposed what happened to Fountain Square, but that it did turn out to be transformative, that the city is vastly different. Now, you can argue about what role Mark Mallory himself played, and I don't know what evidence there is, sort of statistical evidence there is for our reputation nationally and internationally changing. I know that was something he really wanted to do, and that's one reason he traveled so much, was to change a reputation. I don't know of any polls or anything that show – any scientific data that show that has happened. I'd like to think that's true, but I don't know of any data that suggests that. I think he's probably got a lot of anecdotes.
Howard's legacy question?
Well, I think it is anecdotal, but there is evidence out there. I mean, you see the stories and, you know, in the New York Times and other publications and on the blogs and about Cincinnati as a destination. I mean, clearly you can see it happening. And all you have to do is walk through Fountain Square on any summer night, and there's always something going on. I mean, there's people on the streets, and people are doing things. And it used to be, you know, I can remember it's not long ago when it was a ghost town in downtown Cincinnati.
Yep.
And over the Rhine, forget about it. You didn't cross Central Parkway. People do that now. There are restaurants. There's theater.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to leave it there. But the good thing is we'll be talking about this again next week after the election.
That's right.
We've been talking about next week's elections for Cincinnati Mayor and City Council with Gene Beaupre, who's the Assistant Director of the Philosophy, Politics, and Public Honors Program at Xavier University, and the Cincinnati Enquirer's Politics and Government Editor, Carl Weiser. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Rick Andrus. With Howard Wilkinson, I'm Jay Hanselman.